Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Net neutrality. What was that all about? Has it been decided? Does it matter? We're going to try to give you a brief yet deep look at this issue so you come away with an appreciation of the powers at play and the significance of the outcome for all of us. I'm your host, Jane Karwoski, experimental psychologist, Dr. J, along with my co-host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, founder and CEO of Social Network Intermedia, LLC. Let me tell you just a bit about today's guest. Dr. Robert McChesney is one of the foremost American scholars in communication studies. After earning his doctorate at the University of Washington, he spent 10 years at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, then moved to the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, where he has been a research professor, now a professor of communications, and through it all has been a senior research scientist at the university's National Center for Supercomputer Applications. In 2011, he was given a Lifetime Achievement Award from the International Communication Association for communication research as an agent of change. In 2012, the association awarded him the C. Edwin Baker Award for the Advancement of Scholarship on Media, Markets, and Democracy. But first, last but not least, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame recognized his magazine of the 80s and 90s, Rocket, as being the founding of the Seattle rock scene. So welcome to the Social Network Show, Dr. Robert McChesney.
My pleasure to be here.
So today we're going to talk about a much more recent publication, Digital Disconnect, of which Bob is the author, How Capitalism is Turning the Internet Against Democracy. A very intriguing title. And I have to say that I keep thinking of colleagues that I'm writing down a list to send them. You've got to read this book. So there's many connections here about the disconnect between the internet and the economy and politics. Could you give us a brief explanation of your field of political economy, or rather political economics of communications?
I'd be glad to, Dr. J. Basically, when people look at the internet and study that and try to take a scan back and say, what does it mean? What's this phenomena doing in society? There's been a strong tendency to either be very optimistic and utopian about all the brilliant changes for the better and the democratization and the egalitarian nature of the internet on one hand. And there's also been another strain that's been very dystopian that says, this is the end of the world as we know it. And I think both these things have elements of truth, and both these things have value, but neither of them, in my opinion, really factored in the relationship of the internet to capitalism. And I think when you do that, it's easy to sort of weed through the mess and kind of find out what's really happening here. And what I try to do in Digital Disconnect is say, okay, here's the internet and here's capitalism. This is how they're working together. And what I argue is that when you look at it in this manner, you look at the dominant companies, the dominant practices, the government policies, then a different picture comes into view, one in which the democratic potential of these revolutionary technologies is greatly compromised, and it leads to a whole host of very troubling questions about our politics, our economics, and the quality of our lives.
You use the word cartel and the idea that certain factions economically are extorting or shaking down other factions, and the public stands to lose a great deal of what should be common culture, and that it's all becoming monetized and commercialized and so forth, and that commercialization of life is a big problem in the United States particularly. But what can you explain what the different players are in, for example, net neutrality? What is the issue, and who are the players?
I'd be glad to. For one thing, the Internet, just to put a little frame of reference on this, the Internet, when it came along in the 90s, was supposed to be this great beacon of economic competition. It was going to let the little guys have a chance, these big guys, and chop down the dinosaurs and the giants. In fact, with no sense of, well, it was a great deal of irony, the Internet's probably become the greatest creator of economic monopoly in the history of any economy. It's dominated by a handful of absolutely gigantic monopolistic firms that are comparable in their market power to John D. Rockefeller Standard Oil. These are the companies like Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, eBay. I think anyone listening to the show is very familiar with these companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one specific group of companies that I also spend a lot of time looking at in the book, and these are the telecommunication and cable companies that have taken over wire broadband access. Like, you get a computer ISP in your home for broadband usually through a cable TV company, or cell phone access. And what I argue here is that these are companies that in the 1990s, everyone thought they were all going to really go out of business. There was no reason for them to exist. Once we had high-speed Internet access into the home, who's going to pay a cable TV or satellite TV company $100 a month for access to TV shows, and you can get everything over the Internet?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to pay for telephone service, and you can Skype and do everything over the Internet? So what's striking is how these companies have not only survived, they've gotten bigger, they face less regulation, and they're making extraordinary profits. And the companies specifically are AT&T and Verizon and Comcast. And they've pretty much divided up the cell phone and Internet service provision market between them, along with a couple of other companies that were junior players. And why you call it a cartel is that in economics, most of the industries in the American economy are what economists call oligopolies, like the automobile industry or the beer industry or the soap industry. There's three or four companies that sell most of the products, and they compete with each other, but they don't compete, you know, they compete a different way, but they are competing for profits, but usually not through price competition. A cartel is different. What AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast have done is divide the market between them. They say, you get that turf, we get this turf. It's not just that they don't compete, it's just that they act almost like a monopoly for us. They teamed up to basically make as much money as possible. And what this means is that these people we pay a fortune to get Internet access from or to get cell phone service from are making extraordinary profits. These are some of the most lucrative companies in the economy because they charge us through the teeth for really mediocre service, and there's no market competition pressure on them to improve their product because they've divided up the market. And they own all the politicians, so there's no regulatory pressure to improve the product. And this is why American Internet access and cell phone service, which 15 years ago was the envy of the world, now ranks well down the list. We have much slower service, you say, much crappier service than most other countries, advanced countries. And this is where this whole issue of net neutrality comes into play that you started off at the top of the show talking about. Net neutrality is the idea that when you get Internet access or cell phone access, that the network you get it through, be it Comcast, AT&T, or Verizon, will not discriminate against all the services you have access to. They won't let some websites through, but not let other websites through. All of them will be treated equally. And that was always been the genius of the Internet. It was an open system. Anyone could get in and participate. No one got privileged location on the Internet. And a lot of Americans for a long time thought that that was just the natural way of this magical technology. It was nothing that, it was just the technology, nothing to do with policy. But in fact, what we now know, and I talk about in the book, is only policy that kept it open. These companies, now that they have monopoly cartel control over cell phones and Internet access, desperately want to get rid of that policy that they're required to treat all websites and all users equally. Because if they can discriminate, they can, in effect, privatize the Internet and turn it into cable television. So if one website wants to get through, they'll have to pay money to Comcast or AT&T or Verizon to get access to the network. And they can play favorites and legally and get away with it, which they're not allowed to do now. So that's why this is such an enormous fight to put into writing, into law, unequivocal that these companies have to respect the amount of net neutrality. They can't use their monopoly cartel power to privatize the internet and basically set it up as an even larger cash register for the shareholders.
And this is why you compare some of these meetings between the ISPs, the AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, with the big players like Google and Microsoft, et cetera, to the Godfather, the families splitting up the market and so forth.
It's very much like that. In fact, in Godfather 2, there's the classic scene where Hyman Roth is celebrating his 67th birthday on a rooftop or a patio in Havana, Michael Corleone and all the American gangsters. And in that scene, they're basically dividing up a cake that's shaped like the island of Cuba. And they're giving each gangster a slice. And as Hyman Roth giving them the slice, he's telling them what part of Cuba they get to run. And while he's doing this, Hyman Roth says, isn't it great to be in a country with a government that believes in private enterprise? And I think that's exactly what's going on in the United States. There's an enormous cake being carved up at the Federal Communications Commission. We don't know about it. We're not on the patio. It's just these companies. And then they serve themselves a monopoly cake, and then they tell us, isn't it great to be in a country that respects private enterprise?
Right, and we don't know, because it's not transparent or out in the public eye, we don't know what kind of deals are being made with the FCC and the big players. I want to go into that a little bit more in terms of what policy. You make a big point in Digital Disconnect about the importance of a communication policy and what that will mean. And I'd also like to talk about what the consequences are. So we'll go into that a little bit more in the next segment. We are talking with Dr. Robert McChesney, and he is the author of Digital Disconnect, How Capitalism is Turning the Internet Against Democracy.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Carlos, you getting ready for bed?
In a minute, Dad. I'm studying.
Well, it's good he's doing his homework.
Something we should be doing.
What do you mean?
You know that guy who called a few days ago from a so-called mortgage rescue company?
Yeah.
He mailed us all these papers to sign.
Think we should?
I heard that many of these people who claim they can save homes from foreclosure are not legitimate, and that we should do our homework, not rush into this. Look, I know we're behind in our payments, but the last thing we need is to be scammed.
A wise decision. McGruff the Crime Dog here. Beware of companies that promise to save your home from foreclosure. It only takes a little time to become informed. Start by finding a free legitimate housing counselor today.
Take the first step. Visit www.ncpc.org/mortgagefraud. That's ncpc.org/mortgagefraud. This message is from the National Crime Prevention Council and U.S. Department of Justice.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where we are speaking with Bob McChesney, Professor of Communications from University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And we're talking about net neutrality, and I'd like just a little smidgen of history here. Where are we at in this whole process of policy making with regard to digital communication?
Well, we're right in the middle of the most important fight in the history of the Internet right now going on concerning net neutrality, which is the FCC is revisiting its net neutrality rules. It's taking public comments. and it's going to make a decision very soon. Free Press, that group I helped organize 10 years ago, is freepress.net, has been coordinating the national campaign to protect net neutrality and prevent these monopolies from privatizing the Internet. And I'm delighted to say that literally millions of people from across the political spectrum have contacted the FCC and Congress saying we want a truly open, uncensored network where everyone has equal access to it. And we don't want to let these companies discriminate while they choose where they can maximize their monopoly profits. And so it's really a crucial fight. I would urge people to go to freepress.net. Get up to speed on the issue. If you haven't gotten involved, do get involved. One thing I can tell you from my experience, as corrupt as our governing system is, when enough people raise enough hell, you can actually force people to do the right thing. And right now we're doing exactly that. We're getting a lot of Americans from across the political spectrum. Most of the business community is on our side in this because they don't want to be shaken down by these companies any more than average people want to be shaken down. We can't win this, but it does take people to get off their dust and get involved.
So it's freepress.net, am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Is there also a Twitter handle on this?
You know, I'm not a Twitter guy.
Okay, that's all right. Okay.
I would imagine a hashtag net neutrality has plenty of action, though.
Yeah.
This is a huge issue. I think people want to learn more about it. They'll have no – they can spend months reading stuff online.
Okay, and so what would be an example of say, a regular person online with their business or even someone who's just online? What would they say that would be helpful? I know they're going to go to this site and they're going to learn, but what is the bottom line? I mean, what can the little guy do?
Yeah, what happened was, and I don't want to get too wonky, but this is a chance to explain the situation. In 2002, the Federal Communications Commission reclassified broadband access, ISP, and cell phones. Instead of being what's called a telecommunications service, like telephones, they were reclassified as an information service, which means they're like just in a computer business, like IPM or Compaq selling you a computer. And as a result of that, it meant that the FCC could not regulate them as they once did. You know, for telephones, which are natural monopoly, the government creates with government licensing, they have a right to go in and do serious regulations of public interest. So this reclassification took place that basically removed broadband, ISP, and cell phones from serious regulation. Well, this means basically the government is powerless to enforce net neutrality. But it's all self-inflicted wounds. Basically, the FCC has the legal right, and the Supreme Court has acknowledged it, to go in and reclassify and say, no, this actually is a telecommunications service. You're wrong. And then it would institute net neutrality without a problem. So the fight right now is to get the FCC to basically reverse itself and say this is a mistake made under the Bush administration to basically reclassify what is obviously a crucial telecommunications service into some sort of obscure information business. Let's get it back to where it was and get it, and then we can institute net neutrality, which is so long needed.
Oh, thank you. That really helps. I get it. And what a major move. Okay, I get it. Okay.
So the FCC has control over the classification, which will determine how much control they have over the players in this game. Well, what I found interesting, too, was a little bit of the history of the support for this, that President Obama, in his first run for office, was a staunch supporter of net neutrality. But in his second run for office, what happened?
Well, I mean, what happened? This is actually not very complex. We're talking about, in the case of AT&T, Comcast, and Verizon, three companies that have never known a competitive market in their life. They were created by government monopoly licenses for telephone and cable TV service. In their area of expertise, this isn't serving the public. These companies always rank as the most heated companies by consumers. Their genius is always that they own the politicians and regulators. They have thousands of regulators, many of whom are lobbyists. I mean, many of them were former members of the Senate or Congress or the FCC. You get paid seven-figure incomes to make sure that the government does whatever they want. And so the problem we face with net neutrality is these companies just haven't unbelievable army of super well-paid lobbyists who come from the inside advocating their case tirelessly. And that's the only reason why they are able to win, because they have no popular support. I mean, anyone who hears about net neutrality gets it. That's ridiculous to let three giant monopolies have unchecked control over the bottleneck of the entire digital system. No one likes that idea. But the problem is there is this immense corrupt political power. And that's why the only way you're going to defeat that sort of corruption is with a huge army of everyday citizens saying, no, this is unacceptable.
Because the power of the voters may gradually overcome the power of the lobbyists.
Yeah, what happened with Barack Obama is I think he meant well when he ran for president. You know, I think he genuinely believed that he would be the greatest champion of net neutrality ever. But I think once he got into office, you know, he's looking over at the FCC and he's seeing AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast, these are three of the 20 largest companies in the world, basically flooding the city with money, knowing, you know, do I really want to get in a fight with those guys?
Mm-hmm.
Do I really want to throw a punch at the toughest guy in the bar? Because if I get in a fight with them, that means everything else I want to do politically could be jeopardized. They have that much power. That's how corrupt our system is.
Mm-hmm.
I think he basically said, let's try to work out a deal that will make them happy.
So a trade-off for something that something else or many
other
things.
I think that's probably the logic that went through his mind. Maybe this will help me get health care through or some other scheme that I'm keen to get through in my administration.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the outcome of this, I'm still trying to get my head around what is going to be the consequences if there's no more net neutrality, if the ISPs can charge a lot of money for the big players to get online. That I would assume is going to translate into some kind of fees for the consumer. Is that how the thinking goes?
Yeah, it'll be certainly a less competitive market. If we have lose net neutrality completely, it'll be a less competitive market for consumers. If any business that wants to do business online will have to go through these companies and they can set the terms, or they won't allow you on their network. You don't have a right. If you're selling books against the Amazon, you don't have a right to go online on this private network unless you get the permission of AT&T, Comcast, or Verizon. And now you do have a right. They can't stop you from getting a website unless you're breaking the law. But if you're legal business, then you're entitled to go there. If you're a legal person, I'm allowed to go on and have my website criticizing the government. And they can't stop me. Now they'd be able to stop you. And that's the core of the problem. That's a lot of power. It's unaccountable in very few hands. And we have no reason to trust these people. I mean, what we've learned in the last decade, and what we've learned even since Digital Disconnect was published last year, is the extent to which these huge companies have been spying and surveilling on Americans illegally, and lying about it and sharing their information with the National Security Agency. We should be going the other direction. We should be putting in safeguards to protect our privacy, our rights, and the openness of the Internet. We shouldn't be just letting the handful of corrupt monopolies be unaccountable and get that much more powerful.
May I ask, what is the biggest company, body of people who, with money and influence, that is on the side of net neutrality at this point?
Well, this, you know, technically, Google, all the companies that use these networks are technically on the side of net neutrality because they don't want to have to pay extra money to the AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast to use their networks. So it's in their self-interest to protect net neutrality. And almost all small businesses are on the side of net neutrality.
Okay. Thank you.
But I must say, some of the biggest companies, monopolies, you know, they have a mixed attitude about it. You know, Google or Amazon, if they can work a deal with the cartel, they can pretty much lock in their place, you know. So they have, I think it's an ambivalent relationship to the monopoly there.
Oh, okay. Wow. Fascinating. I see why Dr. J was so excited. This is this is cutting edge. I hope you come back and keep us posted, too. I love this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you both very much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Another question I have is this amount of power, which may or may not be used in nefarious ways. Of course, I am in agreement with the idea that a surveilled people are not free, that this is not freedom to have someone keeping track of everything we do and storing it in some mammoth warehouse somewhere. But what are the consequences of setting up this possibility, do you think?
The possibility of surveillance?
Yeah. That, I mean, the infrastructure exists. We can say, oh, no, they're not going to do that. But if the possibility exists, is there any reasonable expectation that it won't be used?
I think that you can almost guarantee when the possibility of surveillance exists, it will be used and it will be abused. And that's the historical record of all countries, all governments, all at all times. It could be some honor system. If they want to do something that they can do that has that much power, it's just unrealistic. And we see it from every scandal that's come out, from Edward Snowden's releases to WikiLeaks. What we see is that the government has used its surveillance power. They have to have commercial interests, too, to advance their interests illegally oftentimes. And, you know, we should have no trust in them. We should have safeguards in there to prevent this from being an option for someone to do secretly behind closed doors at a government agency.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the most interesting points I think that you bring out in Digital Disconnect is that there's a catechism, several of them, sort of mythological beliefs that we hold, and one of them is that capitalism is democracy and vice versa. And I think you make a very good point of illustrating how especially capitalism run amok with a huge discrepancy, huge gap between the very wealthy and most people is setting things up for a very, very dangerous situation. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today, Dr. McChesney. I count it a real honor to have had you on the Social Network Show.
Your honor is mine. Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to the Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. Coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on the Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.